welcome back to another edition of the Fallscast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press. And kind of gloomy Cuyahoga Falls today. It's Wednesday, September 13th. Currently raining, or just did by last time I looked. We are here with a couple of our favorite Fallscasters, including myself, Bart Sullivan. We've got Stephen Mulay.
Hello.
And Patrick Katniss.
Hello.
It's a small group today, but we do have a bunch of news, including my interview with Barrett Moy from the Cuyahoga Falls board game store, Underhills Games, which has been an institution in Cuyahoga Falls for quite some time now, and during the pandemic, found the opportunity to move a couple doors down where they've got a much bigger space. But for now, we've got our roundtable, in which we are starting off with school starting back up again. This week, starting back on Monday, the hybrid format for school started, despite issues with the Ohio Public Health Advisory System and the constantly changing color codes that we're in right now. Dr. Nichols decided that it was time to start school instead of everybody working from home. So currently, the schools are physically returning in a hybrid format that allows for social distancing, splitting the student population in half, allowing half the students to go 2 days a week and the other half going the other 2 days. And then, in the meantime, working from home, vice versa. Families had been asked before the beginning of the school year to choose either to attend in person a number of days per week based on the advisory system of Ohio, or attend school online for the duration of the semester. Of course, then the semester started, and for an entire month, everybody was staying home from school. The USDA has created a waiver system that allows children in the district to receive free breakfast and lunch 5 days a week through the end of the year, December 31st, and online students can have the option to pick up meals for the week, while all students in the hybrid model are able to eat during school in their classrooms when they're attending and bring home any remaining meals for the week. So I realize a lot of people, especially based on talk of the town, are definitely frustrated that the kids are only going back 2 days. I've seen several families complaining that they're even going back at all. And so what do you guys think? I mean, I can see both ways, especially with working families.
Yeah, me too. I definitely see it from both sides. I'm just trying to imagine what it'd be like if my kids were still in school, you know, and which wasn't very long ago, and how that would affect me. I mean, although my kids are older, so they would still be able to be home alone and we'd be able to go about our business without too much trouble. And they were self-starters and they would be able to take care of their own business and track their own homework and do their own IT and all that stuff. But yeah, the younger kids, imagine if you're working family, and then you can't really get childcare now. It'd be hard. I mean, you'd have to get childcare, and when they're, or somebody sit in the house and watch them go to school. I mean, that's not even childcare. You have to have someone else come in, mm-hmm. So you can't work unless you're working from home. I mean, it'd be tough. But on the other hand, send them to school. Maybe they'll get sick. Maybe they'll bring home something to you. And then you bring some home to your parents or your great grandfather or whatever. It's tough.
Yeah. As somebody who's currently doing, even though I'm in college, as somebody who's doing like online school, I think a lot of it, I know that a lot of my classmates are having a hard time because a lot of it just feels optional. And it's probably the same way for high school kids or elementary school kids. Like, it's like when you're going to school, you get up at this time. You like brush your teeth, get dressed, and you go to school. Now it's like you don't have a routine and you don't have a set schedule. You just kind of get up whenever and do what you got to do. And I mean, half of my classes don't even have a set meet time. So it's kind of like okay, here's what we're doing this week. Get it done by Sunday night. And it's the same thing every week. And a lot of it just seems like busy work in a way. Because it's kind of like, okay, just let me get through this list of my stuff I got to do. Then I can relax. So it's like, it sucks not having that in-person interaction with professors and classmates. That's, I mean, it's so similar to like what they're going through. So as somebody who's going through that myself, it sucks. But I mean, we got to do what we got to do.
You do. I agree. I also have a concern of the level of the education that everyone's getting. It's got to be lower. I mean, I can't imagine they can keep a lot of that stuff on the same level when the kids are just not, they're not in school.
Well, especially, you know, the higher the grade you get.
Yeah, I know it. I mean, you know, I have my son's fiance. He is a teacher in the Akron school system. He's an art teacher and he teaches middle school kids and elementary school kids. And he was telling me how hard it was, you know, to teach art through a computer. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, and the little kids art. I mean, so and these are kids that are socioeconomically not well off. They don't have money to buy art supplies. So he has to come up with ideas that are available to everyone. Like, can you make something out of paper towels? Can you make something out of cardboard? Can you make something out of, you know, do you have crayons laying around? What do you have that we can use to give you an art project?
Right. You know?
Because the school's doesn't have any money to give him money to give to the kids to, you know, for art supplies. They right. just don't have the budget for that.
And even then, you'd be going above and beyond if you bought the supplies and then went and delivered them.
Yeah, and I think in some cases, some teachers are doing that. I don't know whether he's doing that or he's had the opportunity to do that because he doesn't make very much money. To be able to do that. But, you know, at some point, I guess you'd have to. I mean, if the kid doesn't have anything and so poor, I mean, I would feel bad. I would say, hey, well, here's some box of crayons. And here's a pad of paper. I mean, you know what I mean? You couldn't do that for everyone, but you certainly could make some advantages. At least I would do it if that was teaching. But, you know, that's me. It's hard on teachers. It's hard on students. It's hard on parents. It's hard on everyone. And everyone, it sucks. I understand why people hate it. Yeah. But, you know, it's necessary. I mean, a lot of people don't agree with that. They don't think it's necessary because they think, you know, COVID's a hoax or it's not as bad as whatever. And I think they're COVID idiots, but, you know, they certainly have right to their opinion. But they certainly, I don't think they should make the rest of the world suffer because they're stupid. Right. But,
and they shouldn't put others at risk because of
what exactly. It's just selfish. But they can't see that way because they don't believe in it. They think it's fake. So, you know, what are you going to do? We can't make everyone happy no matter what you do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Can't please everybody.
No. And it's a tough position for the school system to be in because they're going to get yelled at no matter what side they're coming from.
Right.
I do like the fact that they are offering meals, you know, whether you're there or not. They're offering lunch. I mean, so even if you're stuck at home, you don't have a parent there to help teach you, you're at least still getting lunch.
Right.
Yeah, and you can take it home.
There are a lot of kids a lot of times the only meals they get are the ones they get from school. Don't know what the statistics are for Cuyahoga Falls school system, but I know in Akron and some of the areas in Akron, some of the schools in Akron, that it's a lot higher than you would think. And, you know, it's unfortunate and sad, but, you know, it's the world we live in. Mm-hmm.
From there, we go to the Summit County Board of Developmental Disabilities, also known as Summit DD. They have reached a deal with the city to move to a building that they already own on 2nd Street downtown. The plan was already slated to bring around 100 jobs to the city, and they've announced that it will bring another building half as large as the existing building, which will bring another 30 jobs to the city. The move would likely be completed by spring of 2022, adding city income enough to produce an additional $160,000 in annual tax revenue. Plus, the parking lot that would be constructed by the city as part of this project would help expand downtown parking after hours.
I think that's wonderful. Anytime you can bring jobs downtown onto the Front Street area is a good thing. It's going to make a lot of the restaurants down there when COVID starts to lighten up a little bit, hopefully soon, you know, a lot busier, especially for lunch hour. And, you know, that's can be bread and butter. That's bringing in the dough for them, you know. Mm-hmm.
Oh, especially with the new restaurants going down there.
Yes. Did you see what Jeff Lula?
Jeff Iula.
Iula.
Yeah. Did you see what he said? We're going to make Front Street so great again. Oh dear. Really?
It's already great.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's been great.
It hasn't been great for quite a long time until recently. And has nothing to do with anything that he did.
Right.
So yeah, looking forward to that here in the next couple of years.
Yes, it's going to be cool. I mean, 160 grand and 130 new jobs. So what do you guys think about any negatives to this? Lots of positives.
I don't think there's really any negatives to this.
No, I think that's a good thing. Not much to talk about except for yay us.
Yeah, more jobs isn't really bad.
No, and anytime we get more activity down there on Front Street, it's a good thing.
It's actually starting to look like what Front Street was
when
they first started building down there, you know, centuries ago.
Yeah. Yep. Literally centuries ago.
Yeah.
Although it was decidedly more commercial back then, I would imagine, when it first opened up, taking advantage of the river and, you know, hydroelectric and washing chemicals into the river and dumping all your crap, old tires and...
Well, speaking of old tires, Halloween is coming up.
Yes, yay Halloween.
So there's been a lot of curiosity on social media about, you know, what's going on with Trick or Treat. Is it going to happen because of COVID? Is it not going to happen? Who do we blame? But the Falls is going to have several different things. They will have the annual Trick or Treat on Halloween this year, since Halloween falls on a Saturday. And that'll be 6 to 8 Halloween night. And basically they're just asking all houses that are going to participate, make sure to follow COVID guidelines online. You know, be safe with how you pass out candy. Personally, I like the candy chute that I've been seeing different memes of.
I haven't seen that too.
Good idea. Because you can avoid contact with the kids. I mean, just by holding the bowl out or putting the bowl down and sitting right by it and say, take a couple.
That's what I was
thinking. But those bowls are going to have lots of hands in them.
True.
So, I mean, how do the parents going to handle it? They're going to wash the candy with antibacterial wipes before they let them eat it or what? I mean, because they're going to open the package of candy with their hands. Then they're going to take the candy out with their hands and stick it in their mouth. So their hands could be potentially contaminated with COVID. I just don't understand that.
Like a cooking tray of just candy laid out and having tongs. Like you're at a buffet or something. And just grab.
I mean, I would almost feel lame and just give out quarters or something like they used to do in the old days. Although they probably get expensive quick.
I have a feeling in years to come, we're going to have another urban legend like the razor blade in the apple. All because of this.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, sure.
We can have a hand sanitizer. It'll be like the toothpaste, but for COVID.
Oh, boy. we should talk about an event called the Octagon Falls Trick-or-Treat Treasure Hunt. It's being held on October 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. at 10 different sites throughout the city. Each site will feature a drive-through stop with treat bags, character visits, and city trucks on display. Since Touch a Truck had to be canceled. People who visit will receive a sticker at each location to put on a treasure hunt card that will be collected at the last stop, entering participants into a prize drawing. The city is also encouraging neighborhood ambassadors to help identify spooktacular houses decorated for Halloween, which will become part of a Halloween display tour. That's kind of neat. Residents can register houses for the tour on a city website. There will also be a virtual costume contest wherein parents can email a picture of their kids in a costume to the city to enter. The entries are due by Monday, the 26th of October, and will be available to view online on the 30th. Finally, the city is moving forward with a city-wide trick-or-treat on Halloween night from 6 to 8, which Bart already mentioned. We are asking houses that intend to participate to review COVID-safe guidelines.
I do like that the Halloween display tour. I mean, they always talk at Christmas time, you know.
Sure.
Tell us where all the houses that are brilliantly lit up are, you know, so people can drive by. But they never really do that for Halloween.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I actually have some pictures, cool pictures of houses in the past that I've taken, you know, like some of those spooktacular houses. I used to walk around with my kids and make a point to try to photograph some of the fronts of these houses. So I kind of have a little folder full of them. I'm thinking about posting some of those on our Facebook page just to see if, just to get in the spirit, because this doesn't seem like Halloween to me, man. It just gives it the COVID stuff, everything else going on. Just, I can't even think about it. Because normally I'm making plans to go to like adult Halloween parties and wear cheesy costumes and go drinking and hanging out with my friends. And now I'm just, you know, it doesn't feel like that way at all.
No, I definitely, it's hard to say how Halloween is going to be this year, especially with the kids, you know, not all in school. You know, it's like the younger ones don't have their Halloween parties. And that's usually, yeah, you know, one of the, you know, fun days of fall for them.
Absolutely.
Right.
My kids used to look forward to that stuff like crazy, man. I did. I used to go in with them because I was stay-at-home dad for a while, and I used to go in with them and help them get in their costumes and go in with them and volunteer in the classrooms and hand out, help the teachers and stuff. I mean, I used to get into it.
Yeah, when I was going to Price, we would like get in our costumes, we would like go on a walk. I remember what we did. I think we went like not trick or treating, but we just kind of went on. We would meet in the gym in our costumes and come up Halloween parties and stuff. That was always fun back in elementary school.
Are you guys gonna do anything for Halloween at all? Gonna go anywhere? Gonna get a costume? Gonna walk around? Any plans to drive around and see the spooktacular tour? This Halloween display tour?
That might actually be fun to do. Actually,
I think it would be fun. Actually,
I have gone to Carnival of Horrors a few times at Blossom, but haven't been there like the past few years. And I actually haven't dressed up since like probably middle school, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I imagine the haunted houses, they're probably really hurting. I know there were a few drive-through ones, but.
Oh, that's right. They can't do the in-person ones right now, can they?
No.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that rely on that for their living. I haven't talked to them a number of years, but I used to know this couple that what they did is they actually had this huge cache and like multiple storage lockers full of Halloween decorations. And they used to be hired to come in and help design and build these haunted houses. And they used to run a couple of their own, and they're big time, and they made a crap ton of money. That was they'd all year long, they would prepare for the Halloween season and they would make all their money in a couple months. That's what they did. I thought it was amazing that they got in. They were like really into it, and they had all kinds of props, and you know, it was pretty cool stuff. Now, you know, I know they've got to be hurting because that was their only sense of the only piece of income, unless they maybe spread out the Halloween to Christmas decorations. That kind of be the kind of same kind of business, you know.
They kind of lost out with the Ren fairs, and then Halloween hits and they can't do Halloween.
Nope. Yep. Tough.
So I guess it would be just wait and see. At least some of the events kids can participate while still being social distant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Finally, in the news, last week, the fourth Tuesday of September, was National Voter Registration Day. And in Summit County, the day marked a widespread voter registration effort that included registration at Cuyahoga Falls Library, as well as many other locations around the county. I know Stowe Library did it. And I believe there were registering people at Akron Libraries. So here we're reminding everyone, because as this comes out, next week will be the deadline. October 5th is the deadline for voter registration. So if you haven't registered yet, go to the Summit County Board of Elections website and for all the complete information on how to register to vote and get your registration in there. October 6th is when they're going to start sending out the absentee ballots that you will have most likely received a couple registration forms for already. October 6th to November 2nd is when you can send the absentee ballots in by mail or vote in person at the county polling place. 31st, deadline to request an absentee ballot. November 2nd, deadline to postmark your absentee ballot. November 3rd, I don't even know if there's a good name to call it other than Election Day. Polls are open 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., and the Summit County Board of Elections must receive your absentee ballot that day by 7:30. So remember, voting is important. Don't just not vote. Don't just not vote and then complain that things didn't go your way.
It's true.
Yeah. So do you guys plan on voting in person early on Election Day, or are you going to do absentee ballots? And have you already asked for yours yet?
I've already asked for my absentee ballot, but I think I'm going to turn it in at the Board of Elections.
You know, drive it over and drop it in the box. Okay. Yeah, my dad's doing that too. He's filling it out and he's going to try to mail it, but I'm going to convince him to go drive it down. And if he doesn't do it, I'll go drive it for him. I'll just drop it in the box. I don't trust the mail anymore these days. Jennifer and I, our 25th wedding anniversary is on October 7th. We're going to early vote in person with masks and, you know, armed with the antibacterial, you know, soap, whatever. And then we're going to go do that in person just because as an anniversary gift to get it out of the way and get it done. And so we feel like we did our part. I don't trust the absentee ballot so much. I mean, if you don't fill it out quite right, it can be rejected for a minor lame issue, you know, where maybe it gets lost in the mail. Whereas if you go do it in person, you're guaranteed that, you know, you did it right and it's going to be counted. That's my big concern. I understand that absentee ballots are safe and all that kind of stuff, and there aren't any problems with that. But I still am nervous about it enough that I'm willing to go and do it in person. And the funny thing is, if I wait till Election Day, I go to a local polling place, there's probably going to be less people there than there are at the Summit County Board of Elections.
Yeah.
Because I know the local, you know, the wards here in the Falls, they're not very big. And there's usually hardly anybody in there. Might be different, you know, this election. It seems like I would expect probably higher turnout overall. Not discounting COVID, of course. COVID might severely affect that. Anyway, Patrick, so did we hear from you yet? What are you doing?
We're probably honestly going to just vote in person.
You can do it on election day. You can do it on Election Day?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Hey, Bart, let's talk about the art show at New Milk Studios, the place that you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, I just discovered this today, in fact. And this will be the premier exhibit at the gallery. So they've just opened recently. The show is called Feeling and Healing, The Art of 2020. And this is at New Milk Studios, which is located at 2104 Front Street. Their premier exhibits will have all work that has been made after March 22nd, 2020. So after the pandemic began.
So COVID-related work or COVID-inspired work. Or
exactly.
So is this already show been curated? It's already ready. It's already hung. Are they asking for artists
to contribute? They're looking for arts right now.
Okay. So it's a call for artists.
Yeah, it's a call for artists. They need art submitted by November 3rd.
Okay,
so artists still have another month to go.
I have a bunch of stuff I have done since then. I had a little spurt of creativity during COVID that I shot a bunch of pictures while hiking just to try to get out of the house because I was driving going back crazy. Yeah, I might put some stuff in there. Absolutely. Why not?
On their website, it says, we challenge all artists to show what they have been working on and feeling during these strange and challenging times that celebrate the facts. We still have creativity and community. As artists, we can and will heal together. This exhibit is to showcase what artists have been creating since the day Ohio implemented the shutdown.
I think I'm going to take a really detailed, beautiful picture of a giant pile of steaming poo. And then I'd like blow it up really big, super artsy lighting and stuff, and a cool background. But I'll make it look amazing, but it'll be a piece of poo, and like in black and white, you know, it'd be awesome. I'm kidding, but
Well, this show, it is going to be juried, and it's going to be juried by none other than Amy Mothersbaugh.
Oh, look at that. I'll have to slip Amy some free stuff to get her to like my work.
So
I'll pay her some compliments at least, you know?
Artists out there, if you're interested, check out newmilkstudios.com for more information about how to enter.
Very cool. That's exciting.
So after this roundtable, we're going to have my interview with Barrett Moy from Underhill Games.
Bart, I would like for you to discuss Underhill Games. I have been walked by that location so many times. I know nothing about what they do in there and what kind of games they have. I've seen people in there late at night playing games.
Yeah.
I know they have get-togethers there, but I don't know nothing about that business. I know it's been there forever. Can you please tell us about it?
Yeah, based on the interview, because I haven't been there in a while, based on the interview with Barrett, they don't have as many demos and, games, people sitting down and talking about their game right now because of COVID.
Sure.
But moving the location, they moved to a location that was about twice the size of the little hole in the wall that they were in. But it's still in the same plaza.
I walked by it like a week or two ago. Yeah, it is a much better, bigger space for sure.
Yes. Yeah, I think where they were before, once you added the cabinets and the shelves with all the games, and then set up tables for people to play on, there was no walking around in there.
I believe it. The old space wasn't very big. Was there new space? Is it in the old Abbey Ann's? Is that where it is?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, that was a big space. Like it had a small like frontage, like that wasn't very wide, but it was very, very deep. It was a big space.
So that's
when you walk
definitely
in there.
Gonna help them.
That's neat.
But Underhill Games, they have just about any board game you can think of, ranging from simple like Connect Four, kids games you would get at Toys R Us, to more complicated RPGs, Ticket to Ride, Settlers
of
Catan.
I'm assuming D&D as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes, they are very big on role-playing games there.
Gotcha.
And in fact, they do have a demo coming up for a new RPG with role-playing game, which turns out it's like a $300 game.
Wow.
So they purposely like, hey, we can get somebody in to do a demonstration. People can sit there and play and then decide if they want to spend the $300.
Yeah, $300 is a lot of money if you're not sure whether you're going to like the game or not.
Exactly.
For sure. So,
and then Barrett's did tell a bit about the different options they have for buying games there. And they have a flea market coming up where you can register to come in, to come in at a particular time and browse the items they have and save some money or get store credit.
Very cool.
But they Underhills used to have board game nights every Friday night.
I remember that.
Yeah. And I would go down a lot of times because it's pretty much across the street from my apartment.
Oh, okay.
And it was fun to go down and hang out with people.
We should mention the location of it. If you're not familiar where it is, it's Goodwill, Red Fox,
Dollar Store,
and the Dollar Store, and the Comedy Club. It's all right in there. It's on that strip. Wasn't that across from KFC?
Yes, and next across to McDonald's on State Road.
And next to McDonald's, yes, and next to McDonald's and CVS on the other side.
Yes. And then, the six pizza places on the other side of the road.
Yeah, exactly. But it used to be a cross street from that gross strip joint, but, whatever.
Yeah.
The KFC was definitely an improvement.
Well, a lot of stuff has moved in there.
Yeah. I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
No.
Let's not talk about the debate at all.
Yeah. So,
thank you everyone for joining us. If you have an idea about someone we should interview, drop us a line at fallsfreepress@gmail.com. You can also email us there if you have an article submission for us. We're always in the market for article submissions. But for now, we'll say goodbye and hope you guys join us next week. And also, remember to get out and vote. Bye, everyone.
Bye, Cuyahoga Falls.
And we're back this week with Barrett Moy from Underhills Games. How are you doing today?
Very good. Happy to join you.
Thank you for joining us. So, you were one of the partners at Underhills Games. How long have you been working there?
I have owned part of Underhills Games since 2006 when we opened in the fall.
Okay.
So it's been years this year.
Oh, wow. It's definitely, there's a lot of shops in Cuyahoga Falls I don't realize that have been there for as long as they have.
We just moved to our new location this past spring from our old location, which was 50 feet away. So we're in the same mall.
I didn't even realize you guys moved.
We moved 50 feet down the street, right in the middle of the shutdown in the pandemic. Because, you know, there's only two or three of us moving stuff back and forth. So we were safe and distanced.
How is the pandemic affected? I mean, aside from moving.
The pandemic itself wasn't that horrendous, you know, before and after wise, because we actually moved to a larger space, we could actually put in socially distanced aisleways, move the tables further apart to make sure they were at least 6 feet away from each other. You know, our aisles are now 10 feet wide and 6 feet wide, so there's much more space. And it happened to fit in with the limitations of the pandemic. What really got us was we were declared not essential and had to shut down for a couple of months.
I guess that gave you guys enough got the time to move at least.
I mean, we were planning the move at the end of March, early April. Things got shut down, so we sat out. They started reopening a little bit for May. We said, oh, we're allowed to do some other functions, so we actually moved over during that time and had a grand reopening in June when they actually opened up more of the businesses so we could operate again under certain parameters, like having masks on, making sure there's plenty of space to socially distance, and that kind of thing. The one true part that we got hurt is we have a lot of in-store play where people come in, try new games, play tournaments, play weekly meetups, leagues, and the like. So that's where we had to adapt to the new restrictions of the virus running around.
So with in-store games, how has it just been able to limit the number of players in each game or limit the number of games being played at a time?
It's both. We obviously set our tables further apart to make sure there's distancing. We limit it to 5 people per table. And, you know, at a certain point, we go, nope, that's it. That's enough. We're done. And, of course, everybody has to wear a mask in store. So we've done that. But numbers are also lower because people are being more cautious taking it home rather than coming into the store and playing. So we encourage people to rent games from our rental selection so they can literally take it home, try it before they buy it. It's $5 for 3 days, $10 for 5 days for a week, 7 days for $10 to take a game home, and they just sign a little contract that says I'll pay for the game if I break it. And we have a library of about 300 different games, of which we've got 80 or 90 in our rental selection. And then you get all your money back if you decide to buy the game. So you would come in and say, hey, I'm going to rent this for a week for $10. You come back and go, I want to buy a copy of this game. You get your $10 back in store credit that you can apply to that purchase.
Okay, so that's sort of, yeah, you sort of pay for it, pay for half the game, see if you like it, and then pay for the rest, or in such a, yeah.
$80, $90, $100, you know, board games that are kind of more complex board games. So you don't want to commit that amount of money unless you really like the game. That's why we have the rental program, so that you can spend a tiny fraction of that money for the game to play it. And if you don't like it, then you don't commit to the full amount of the game. And the credit can be used on anything. So it's not just applying to that game. You could use it anything in the store, from snacks and drinks to other games to dice and accessories.
Okay. That definitely, especially when you guys used to have like board game nights every Friday night with people coming in, and now you can't really do that, I guess a good substitute.
It's a substitute.
It's not like having all our friends join together at the store, but
right. It's not like the old days where you would have Friday Night Magic and 40 people get packed into the store. Nowadays, we can socially distance and seat 40 people because, yeah, we moved into a significantly larger space at the Smith Center.
Okay. Where did your interest in board games and RPGs come from?
I've always been a role-playing fan, so that started when I was a kid. As far as board games and Magic, that started in the early to mid-90s. My business partner, Lee, and myself were both judges for Magic the Gathering in the 90s, and I was a regional tournament organizer for Wizards of the Coast. And then I decided, oh, having a game store would be a good idea in 2006. So we partnered together. Lee's a Cuyahoga Falls native. I'm from Illinois, so you know I get to visit the store 4 or 5 times a year.
Okay.
I'm more of the silent partner where I negotiate the lease. I deal with insurance. I deal with our accountant, taxes, all of the background stuff. Lee does the day-to-day. He does the weekly orders. He sets up events. He runs our little 3D printer that makes custom miniatures.
Oh, nice.
So you can put in for a custom miniature. There are websites out there where you go, okay, I want this to be a dwarf with an axe and an acute helmet. And then they would generate a file, and then you would hand Lee the file, and next day it's printed up as you want it, and then you can go paint it on your own to make it exactly what you want.
The ability to 3D print has definitely affected a lot of different things in gaming, I've seen.
Yeah, lots of custom stuff. So for certain board games, they have a lot of tokens and markers, and we can do custom tokens and markers for a variety of games, because they have released the files publicly out there where they go, okay, this is Terraforming Mars. These are the forests. These are the cities. These are the files we want to use. And they'll print out exactly the right size for the spaces on the board that they're going to be placed in.
So in essence, just, you know, by putting in the file, if the file exists, you could pretty much print an entire board game, or, you know, like the layout for how you're going around.
It's all the accessories. Oh, this is a 3D bit of terrain. It makes it look a little cooler.
Exactly.
It's kind of like adding customizations to your car or accessories to any collectibles you have. So people love to add what they call bling to everything, from Barbie dolls to cars to board games. So they add little special things to make it more unique, more customized to them, a little cooler.
So instead of if you're playing an RPG and you're explaining the crew left a cave and came up upon a flying airship, you know, instead of pulling out the Playhouse airship, you know, you could literally have one made.
Custom.
Yeah.
Say, oh, we're on this boat. Okay, this is the top deck of the boat that you had custom printed because you developed the file and gave it to us and said, hey, I need this custom boat deck made. Okay, we can print that out for you. And then obviously we'd have to price it based on the amount of material used, the amount of printer hours used, and so forth. But it's a custom price for a custom piece. And it's very exciting for us because it's brand new, and it gives a little bit more of a personal touch for each unique person wanting something for themselves.
Well, and if similar things start coming in that people are requesting, there's sort of an idea of what kind of things local gamers are into.
Mm-hmm. Dice, lots of dice. We have different colors, different shapes, different configurations, different materials, because there's a whole series of metal dice out there, and they are impressive when they hit the table. Unfortunately, the tables don't like it that much. That's why we also sell dice trays that are meant for metal dice to fall into, so they don't damage anything around them. But yeah, dice is huge. We've got an entire aquarium. You walk in, and people just literally paw through it. And you know, they are very excited to go, oh, I found the exact die to match my set, or to create their own set.
Are there any new games that you know people are interested in, whether at Underhills or in general?
There are the old standbys, like Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder, that people will form groups and play either at home or in the store. Magic is a perennial favorite. And then as far as new board games, they're always releasing something new, be it the next Star Wars miniature set, the next HeroClix miniature set, the next Magic the Gathering set. And then we have board game of the month type things where we have demo days. This weekend coming up, they're doing Gloomhaven. It's a $140 retail game, but we're opening one up and teaching people how to play so they can experience this massive game for relatively low price of, you know, of the $3 play fee. So you come in, you want to take up some space and play something, we charge you $3. But this comes with a learn to play day. And when you pay those $3, you get it back in store credit. So that's another innovation we've got. You know, you can come play games in the store. It costs you $3 for the space, but you get it back in store credit to spend on something else.
Now, does that happen on any day or just on like the days with the demo for
That happens at events. So if you want to schedule a D&D night where you and five other people are there, each pay $3, we issue the store credit, you've got that space for the four-hour block. You come and demo a game that's, again, $3, but you get it all back in store credit. And then on these special demo days, we have a trained person there to teach you how to play and demo the game. So teach you the rules, walk through a couple of turns, and then let you have at it. So that's a very inexpensive way to try a very expensive game and learn it, instead of trying to open up this giant game at home and committing all kinds of money to it. So we did that with Mariposas a couple of weeks ago, and then we're doing Gloomhaven this coming week. And as time moves on, we'll select more and more games to run this program with.
Well, for a $140 game, that's definitely worth paying $3 to learn if you even want to buy it.
So your services help people make a decision to buy the game. And of course, some of these large games are so heavy and unwieldy that if you were to buy them online, the shipping would cost almost as much as the game. So you wouldn't actually get very much in savings relative to coming to the store, buying it right here, and having it home the same day. Because Gloomhaven is actually, I think it's close to a 15-pound game. It's lots of pieces, lots of boards. I think the heaviest game we've ever carried was a 30-pound game called Ogre. And that's a very old game that got kickstarted all over again and reprinted, and there was a lot of excitement about it. And yeah, it was the first $1 million board game Kickstarter from Steve Jackson Games. So we carried it, and people were like, wow, that's a 30-pound game. And we're like, yeah. So a lot of games nowadays are fairly what I call hefty. They take a lot of thought. There's a lot of theme. There's a lot of well-crafted pieces, a lot of maps, a lot of extras, and even organizing trays for after you've punched everything out of the sprues. So it's very much there are certain games out there that are heavy and huge, and then they're the games that we're more familiar with, the Yahtzees, the Jengas, the games that are $15, $20, $30, the card games like Flux and Phase 10 and Five Crowns that are inexpensive and, you know, familiar. So there's a whole range that we carry.
Okay. You've got the RPG Flea Market coming up. Can you explain what that is?
So this is a used game flea market. So role-playing games and accessories for role-playing games, you put it into the market, you put your own price on it. If it's set, and we log it into our system. If it sells, you will get that amount in store credit. If it doesn't sell, you have 1 week to come back in and reclaim your item. We usually get a few hundred items to 1,000 items that we lay out. This year, we're doing it a little differently. We're going to have one entrance, one exit. So they would come in, I believe it's the rear of the store, go through the flea market area, and then come out the front of the store so people don't have to double back. They don't have to get exposed to extra people. And we will limit people by appointment only to come into this event. So we know that every 15 or 20 minutes, we'll let 5 or 6 people in so they can spread out and look through the items, make their purchases, and walk to the front. So we want to be safe, we want to be smart, and we want to have, you know, a sale that feels reminiscent of a flea market where you're looking through a lot of different lots and a lot of different items. So that's how it works. And then to underhillsgames.com to sign up for the flea market, either to enter items or to get a number to get an appointment in line.
Okay. Was there going to be any sort of like list of what you guys have, or is it going to be really like a flea market? You go in and you just like pick through.
And you go, there's a little bit of digging through. We're going to try to lay everything out on our tables. We're going to have a lot of tables available, and everything's going to be laid out face up, and you will walk by it and go, what's that? Oh, let me look this up. Or, you know, that looks cool. Or I know what I want, and I see it and go grab. It's going to be like that. And then every so often we will have some people wipe down the tables and any boxes to make sure, you know, stuff people's pawed through. And again, we would recommend we'll have hand sanitizer at the door. So sanitize your hands before you touch anything on the tables. Again, I'm emphasizing safety because that is our priority, is make sure people are safe before they come in and shop with us. We take it seriously. And, you know, I used to be a safety manager at a warehouse, so I understand that. That's number one, number two, and number three on the list of things. Make sure people are safe, make sure people are respectful, and then we run our event.
Okay. I guess my last question would be then, like you said, you know, you're not from Cuyahoga Falls. From working at the store, when you're there, what is your favorite thing about the area?
It's a smaller community than I'm used to. So everybody knows everybody. It's very comfortable in the community, but there's also an opportunity because a lot of people go, oh, we didn't know you were there. Well, word of mouth only goes so far. Traditional advertising isn't quite there. Social media is targeted, but not everybody's on it. So it's a combination of it's unfamiliar to me, but a lot of things are familiar to the locals. So that's very much my favorite thing, is I get to learn new stuff, meet new people. But at the same time, they're old and familiar to some of the others at the store because, you know, being there 14 years, our staff is very familiar with a lot of the locals and the regulars.
And you said it at the beginning, where is the store located now?
It's 1753 State Road, the Smith Center, between, I think we've got a Goodwill and a Dollar General and the McDonald's and the Red Fox Pub and all in that mall area. So we originally were at 1747. We just moved three doors down to 1753 this past.
So if anybody hasn't been to the shop in a while, it's not too hard to find the new place.
the sign is exactly the same. You know, the pole for the for the mall. Our name never left. It's Strip Mall, and we're a couple of doors down, and we've got the new sign set up. So it's pretty easy to find, even if they haven't come by in a while. And they should check out the new space. It's bigger, brighter, more product, more shelving, more seating, but yeah, more social distancing as well.
And that's perfect for right now. I know a lot of people are scared to go places. You know, the movie theaters just opened up. I just went there last night and got the whole theater to myself and my friend. So people aren't going out very much, but if you've got more space, that's more of a reason to go.
Yeah. Come in and feel safe that they can stay 6, 8, maybe even 10 feet from the next person. And still have, you know, the ability to go through the store, and everybody is masked up. Everybody that works in the store, and we have a requirement that people need to wear a mask to come into the store. But that's been in place since we reopened at the beginning of June, and now the state has also mandated it, so it makes it easier for us to say, hey, please, this is not only our rules, but it's also the law.
Wonderful. And especially with no conventions happening right now, this is the place to get the games.
Yeah, with no conventions going on, there aren't a lot of places to gather and play the new games or even get them. And that's been challenging on our supply chain end, because a lot of companies during the shutdown stopped producing games a while. So right now they're catching up. They're now printing in China again. They're shipping again. They're refilling the warehouses again. And, you know, just as an example, we have a list of the top 10 games, rated games on BoardGameGeek. We could fill 2 of the 10 in June. Today, we're filling 9 of the 10. So the supply chain has caught up. Stocks have refilled, and people can come in and get the games that they want.
Oh, good. I know with supplies coming in from overseas, it's still a bit difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they are catching up, and that's a good thing.
Good. Well, thank you for sitting down to talk with me today, and I hope everybody who's interested in learning a new game goes to check out Underhill's Games.
Thank you very much for having me, and I've enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
FallsCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or at @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.